Fred.
Hey.
How are you?
We were in the,
I was doing this one. Should we just go ahead and be here? Okay.
You must do what the president of the council.
What's that?
Yes, must wait till I call you up.
Only what you say.
Only when I call you up. I'm just kidding.
I know it will be hard for you.
Okay, let's convene our 2 o'clock council meeting. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard. Seltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Okay, you want to read item 1137?
Yes. Accept the River Public Safety Coordination Task Force final report.
Commissioner Adams. Jane, would you like to come up to the table?
Thank you, President Saltzman. I want to thank, there are many people to thank in attendance today. I'm going to do that towards the end. Multnomah County has a population of over 677,000 people and more than 100 miles of shoreline. Our rivers rank as the most used bodies of water in the state, sometimes the most abused bodies of waters in the state. Portland is the number one overall destination for boating in Oregon. There are over 80,000 registered boats in the county, and the ports of Portland and Vancouver handle over 14.5 million metric tons of commerce annually. Our rivers are heavily used now. With the expected growth in our region, the usage is likely to increase proportionally. Public safety service on our waterways is a responsibility shared by many of us. The work of the River Public Safety Coordination Task Force was to clarify and improve coordination, communication, recording, and dispatch for the effective delivery of public safety services on the waterways. But the underlying goal or job is about multi-jurisdictional collaboration. As the task force report cover demonstrates, there are 11 agencies or jurisdictions who have a boat in the water, so to speak, both literally and figuratively. The four tasks being reported on today emphasize service by these multiple providers and improving service through collaboration. Just one example, the reporting system. In June 2008, activity report you have before you is multi-jurisdictional and designed to provide data to manage a coordinated river safety services system. Typically, data is gathered and reports the work and outcomes of individual agencies rather than collective public safety services. The public doesn't care whose logo is on the boat when the rescuers arrive. They just want the safety services to be there when needed. This task force has been to implement rather than to study. And the team completed all four of their assignments, and I want to thank you for that work. Jane Ames, project manager for my office, will now introduce the task force report and the speakers. Jane.
Do you want to give the thank yous first, or you want to do that at the end?
I'll do that at the end.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. My name is Jane Ames, and before I turn the discussion over to Brad Houghton, John Campbell, the team members and guests, I want to highlight a few of the interesting aspects of working on this project. First of all, I want to start with a thank you to the public safety providers on the team. Most of us wonder how we'll respond to a threatening potential life and death situation. It's an honor to work with people who have devoted their careers and lives developing the knowledge and skills to step intentionally into those most challenging circumstances and protect the rest of us. So I thank you. I also want to point out the brevity of this report. The conciseness, I believe, contributes to its utility. And if you look at your report, it is truly 10 pages of it that is the report. The rest are appendices, maps, minutes, and the basic data. But the report itself is very brief. And for those of us who have large stacks of reports, this is much appreciated and makes it a very useful piece. I also want to point out the some interesting factors that impact public safety delivery and coordination on our waterways. For the most part, public safety on our local waterways has developed as an outgrowth or extension of our land-based public safety. We have developed the services in response rather than having planned them. Even the location of reporting is often based on land addresses. Except for the Coast Guard, river incidents are a very small part of each agency's work. Consequently, one aspect of that you'll note, or that has been in the past, is many of the incidents will be reported only as marine or river, rather than a descriptor that really tells you more about what went on. Our rivers are concurrently used for extensive commercial use, recreational boating, ranging from kayaking and canoeing, sailing, speed boating, as well as skidooing, water skiing, fishing, windsurfing, and swimming, too often in overlapping times and locations. Imagine a sunny afternoon on I-5 with skateboards, roller skates, bicycles, strollers, pedestrians, passenger vehicles, race cars, tractors, and semis and freight trains all sharing the road. The comparison is not unusual for our rivers. And then there are the very obvious, so obvious, in fact, that they're seldom stated factors. We humans can't breathe in water, so a minor incident on land can become a life or death incident in water. Rivers keep moving, so incidents that would happen in one location move, and their potential severity can change rapidly. And then there's the fact that providers arriving at a scene can't get out and walk over to talk to the other providers. So radio communication is absolutely crucial. These factors impact the communication, the protocols, and the data recording system that the task force tackled, and our background for the information you'll hear today. With that, I would like to bring up Brad Houghton and John Campbell. And I want to introduce Brad Houghton, who is a citizen volunteer, is a River Task Force chair, and he's also the general manager of Columbia Crossings on Hayden Island. Brad has been a source of leadership and expertise on the river public safety planning, as well as through the task force efforts. Brad exemplifies the statement, engaged citizens are the true riches of the city. Brad?
Thank you. Very nice. Commissioners, I'm pretty happy to be in here after waiting out in the hallway since about December or so. It's been a pretty wonderful experience to be involved in this process, and this is sort of the second chapter in what will hopefully be a longer book. I'm going to keep my comments fairly short because I know there are a number of people in here that love to get back outside before the weather gets too hot. So the next few days are going to be pretty tough, and then which means there are going to be an awful lot of people out there cruising around in their boats as well. The acknowledgments that I need to make could be fairly long. I think the most important thing, most important people to recognize here, though, at the outset, are Sam for his leadership and his sort of initiation of this process. Bernie Giusto, the now retired sheriff, who also was very active in getting this process underway. Jane, of course, who kind of was the glue that held the whole thing together for the full period that we had here. And then John and Sherry from Campbell DeLong, who provided leadership in this last process and kept us involved in a very productive conversation. I'm very happy to say we've accomplished the four basic tasks that we were asked to do. We have the core and the beginnings of a coordinated reporting system. It looks pretty impressive on the desk in front of you, but the next steps are probably more important. We need to figure out how to use those to help to manage the process better than we're doing it now and create some additional efficiencies. We've improved radio communications through a marine incident communications plan that was agreed to by all the principal participants in the program, and that's now in place. And although it's not perfect at this point, it's working well. And we've also written and adopted several common operating protocols for distress triage, location identification, and have also developed an agreement that would generate a new organization, a small one called River Safety Panel, which would provide a means of communication and discussion for common problems. We came into this thing also looking for a way to license or control private towing services. And if you're a boater, you know what those are. If you're not, you may not. It's like AAA on the water. You can buy a membership for a period of time, and if your boat or you are in trouble on the water, you call them and they'll come and rescue you. They're typically used in non-distress situations, and we struggled for a while trying to figure out how to do licensing, and ended up instead, with a much better solution, I think, which is to rely on the Coast Guard and their existing policies and protocols for making decisions about dispatching private towing firms. We have the further potential, I think, to add additional efficiencies to the provision of public water safety services, and I'm hoping that we'll get an opportunity to do that. We had, in the first phase, which is actually now almost 2 years old, we identified a number of additional issues that were not tackled by this task force, including some opportunity to coordinate interagency training, to participate in the development of boater safety satisfaction reviews and water safety education programs with the Oregon State Marine Board, possibly even to get to the point where we might figure out how to deal with the public relations issues that are common to all of the individual agencies. And last, to look at opportunities for initiating new fee structures for the services that are provided on the water. So I hope you'll read this report. I think there's an awful lot of good hard work in it, and it's pretty telling in terms of the use of the rivers in the Portland area, and we'll look forward to your continued support.
And I just want to underscore that as a volunteer, you've offered dozens and dozens and dozens of hours in helping to chair this, and really want to underline thank you.
Thank you.
John Campbell, the facilitator for our effort, and really ran the show a lot. I really want to thank him.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm John Campbell, and my role here is as a facilitator. I've got a background in public safety and work a lot with coordinating problem solving here. I think facilitator often is the wrong name. I think coach, referee, or therapist might work better in many of these. But we had a lot of good discussions, and I think worked through a lot of things. What I'm going to attempt to do is sort of give you a high-level look at what were some of the challenges faced here, and also what are some of the considerations from a leadership standpoint going forward that are necessary to support some of these elements. This will roughly follow what is in the report, and I'll try to keep it relatively brief while hitting the key results. There were four elements that the task force was tasked with implementing, and again, it was an implementation task force, put together a way to do this and then start implementing. First of those, putting together a comprehensive reporting system, then looking at radio communications and dispatch, operating protocols, and towing service, and I'm going to briefly summarize the results for those. I'll also talk about future considerations, both some strengths in the process and some core leadership challenges.
Are you showing us a PowerPoint?
Yes, I am.
Oh, because it's not
here. We go.
Across.
There we go.
My apologies. I guess I was just showing me a PowerPoint.
You're showing you a PowerPoint.
I like it.
It worked for me. So,
okay. We've got it.
All right.
Okay.
There we go. Okay. But yeah, so that's as an outline. We'll look at the results, and we'll look at some future considerations, the strengths of the process, and core leadership challenges as we go through it. To look at the reporting system, I think it's valuable to look at what some of the challenges that came out with that. Because the result is a reporting template was created, and it's continuing to be refined. You'll see an example of the most recent version as Appendix A in the report. But there were some significant challenges putting that together that I think are important in keeping this in mind. Jane talked about the different providers that are all on the river, and for each of them, except for the Coast Guard, the river events are a very small part of a bigger land-based picture. So the result is, if you're looking at budgeting or running, whether the Sheriff's Office, Portland Fire, or any of these, majority of what's being done is on land. So often the question, what's on the river, you just categorize that's river or marine. It's a small part of what's being done. And being able to put a magnifying glass on that and seeing what happens is another challenge. The other challenge, of course, with that is that we use our rivers to mark our boundaries. So we have, you know, boundaries running down the middle of rivers and some of that. So we have all these different providers trying to coordinate with no one needing to look at the overall picture. They're looking at the individual picture of what it is that they're doing. And that translated some challenges and pulling out the information. It became pretty clear pretty quickly that working with our 911 system, BOAC, to pull out the data was going to be the best place to look at aggregated data and then work with BOAC how to improve that, and they did some very heroic work with that. And one of the challenges was drawing the distinction between what BOAC calls an incident and what we began calling an event, the two being distinct in that an event is the actual thing that happens on the river. An incident is what BOAC assigns to any responder that's dispatched. So if fire and sheriffs are both dispatched, that's two incidents for one event potentially. And so what we wanted to do is say, now what are the things that are going on in the river rather than just how many times are we dispatching? And aggregating that was a bit of a challenge, particularly because actually the third most common incident responder on the river is actually the Portland Police Bureau, because they're often dispatched to a land-based spot as well. Obviously they don't have boats in the water. So looking at that and aggregating that was one of the challenges in looking at that. There's also issues with trying to find the data. People saying, we've got data on this, but who has data? Portland Fire and Rescue. So information isn't easy to aggregate back with BOAC's information, and so we began to realize from the Bureau of Technology Services that, you know, we needed to concentrate on BOAC. And equally, the Sheriff's Office has information about a lot of self-initiated work that wasn't captured in BOAC's system as well. Wanting to make sure that we were capturing all of the information was an important part, and an example of a change was the River Patrol now reporting back to dispatch their self-initiated work as well. And also just figuring out what's on the river was another challenge. Simply, there are different codes in BOAC, but there's no one place to say this was on the river and this wasn't. We looked at a number of different ways and found that probably the simplest way as used in this reporting system is simply to say, was a vessel launched, which is why you don't see Portland Police Bureau, for example, in that. We're looking at was a vessel on the river launched and getting information about that, which gives us cleanest information about on-river response indicators as well. So you'll see the report. I'm not going to go over some details. You'll see that by the month. But I think some critical elements to point out is that aggregate data is simply not a priority for any one of these agencies. And that's not a criticism of the agencies. It's a fact that they all have many different things to do, and they're looking at what's our task on the river. And there's a sense in which our task force worked as sort of a virtual agency that was trying to ask the larger public safety question. And so we do point out that unless city or county leaders use the information, it has questionable relevance to the individual responders. Yes, it's interesting for them to look at, but people who have a broader perspective saying, how are we coordinating all this, is important to include in that. And it's one reason why there was considerable discussion about where is this report going to be housed, who pulls the information together. And the Sheriff's Office is very graciously, both that they came up with tremendous innovations to create the report, and I want to acknowledge them for breaking some huge log jams, and then said, look, we can show you how to do it, but until somebody else does it, we'll do it. And I think they would agree that having whether it's a commissioner's office or the county level or some sort of larger overview level looking at what are all these different elements, maybe a better home. But they have been heroic in being willing to take on the additional workload until that different home is found. And then looking at radio and dispatch challenges and some of the implications there. Certainly the Marine Incident Communications Plan was adopted. It also is fairly brief. It's an Appendix B of your report, and is fairly straightforward even for the layperson to read on that. But a couple of key challenges. Radios matter more on water, so common radio practices on land are a poor fit, and that's really one of the challenges when we try to fix the radio problems we have. And I have worked with emergency response in many jurisdictions around the nation, and I want you to know there is no paradise where police and fire get along wonderfully consistently. There's always going to be some tensions because there's some different priorities in their response, and we have that on the river as well. But they can mitigate some of that by walking across the road and talking with each other. Well, you can't do that on the river. And there was a lot of discussion about having one communication channel, a river net, if you will, so that once you're on the water, everybody gets on the same channel. Well, that is a very nice idea if all that's happening is on the water. But frankly, most of the responders, what's going on is they're also working with their land-based resources, and there's different characteristics to different kinds of responses. So saying there's just going to be one river net means that there's tremendous retraining for all the land-based resources that are coordinating to pick up people at docks or to view and all those types of things. So actually a better communications plan, we think, was put together and coordinated with a lot of discussion, particularly between Portland Fire and Rescue, Gresham Fire, and the River Patrol, and then having Coast Coast Guard involved in that as well, coordinating a result for that so that better use of the National Incident Management System better coordination of what channel are we going on depending on the type of event so that we can coordinate with all of those resources has made sense, and you can review that in the appendix as well. We do point out as well that while a better plan helps routine interagency communication, we think matters more. One of the key themes, people would say, well, we've had all these problems in the past, but right now we're meeting so much we don't have as many problems. And it was really a key theme that just getting people together and meeting on a consistent basis, troubleshooting what has happened, is an important part. Building those relationships does matter. And so we do emphasize while the plan helps, routine meetings by the task force likely contribute as much as to development of the plan, and it's just the human factors in that. And if managers don't keep talking to each other, the plan won't solve the issues by themselves, and is an important element. And we even developed a protocol to address that as well. Under operating protocols, it was sort of a catch-all, basically for protocols other than dispatch reporting and the towing, which were essentially protocols in themselves. Three protocols were developed for things that were particular hot-button issues, and I'll briefly summarize those. The first was event distress triage, which clarifies the responder's obligation to report their position back to BOAC and their estimated time of arrival so that other responders know who's in the water, how fast are they going to get there, and they can coordinate their responses more effectively. And for the first on-scene responder to report back to others en route about what's there, what's the urgency level, and some of that, to make sure that coordination is happening more effectively on the river so that we can be more efficient with those resources as well. The second was event location identification, and the two issues with event location were where's the place in the first place, and then how do we record where it happened afterwards. And where it is in the first place is best summarized by that person using their cell phone to say, I see a problem on the river, and the responder says, where is it? And they say, well, I don't know, it's by an island, it's by a bridge, that kind of thing. And how do you identify that? Because we don't have addresses associated with that. There was a lot of discussion about different issues. Can cell phones use their GPS identifiers and some of that? But that person calling may be a mile away from the event as they're looking at it. Looking at using River Mile and a variety of other indicators. But the key realization was any process we set up with decision trees for how the 911 call taker is trying to clarify where that location is involves teaching that call taker a very in-depth process that they're going to be using on less than 1% of the calls that they get. And that's a difficult thing to make natural human ability to do. And the insight was that the Coast Guard has dispatchers who, for them, it is their full-time job to simply know where the points on the river. So when that call taker, the protocol is when the call taker has someone that they can't identify quickly where the location is on the river, they can patch in the Coast Guard, work with the Coast Guard dispatchers who all do have all the training, and simply solve it that way rather than trying to make our dispatchers at BOAC experts in something that they use rarely. And I think that was a good insight with that. And on the backside, how do we know where these things happen? So all the events aren't simply at the I-5 bridge, 205 bridge, and at the Marine Drive boat ramp and at River Place, for example, because those are common places that people might be calling from. And the insight was simply to use the locations that are called in that can be very, very accurate with GPS identifiers and others, and when there isn't something more accurate, to use the LARS points, which is a bit of a misnomer for the river, but it's the limited access roadways is what LARS stands for, but they are identified geographic points that BOAC uses to indicate places that don't have street addresses so that they can determine which responders to send. And the LARS points on the river were developed previously in partnership with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office and BOAC, and the realization was let's use that expertise already and share that with the other responders so that we can get good location information. Again, leveraging what's already being done to use that expertise more efficiently. And in the third protocol, recognizing the value of an ongoing partnership agreement, having representatives from river response agencies discuss and solve issues, and specifically to consider multidiscipline training. By that we mean fire and law enforcement, for example, or Coast Guard and fire and law enforcement, so that cross-training, improving multidiscipline dive protocols and working through some of those issues, and response terminology review and consistency. We're not going to get the United States Coast Guard to suddenly use the exact same meaning for words that the Sheriff's Office does or the Fire Bureau does, but making sure that there is consistency of understanding of what the different terms mean, and equally we're not going to go the other way as well. But having each responder understanding what the definition of terms are is a value there. And finally, as far as the four elements of the task force, the towing agreement, and we did create an agreement, but it was a little bit different than the original intent, which was to create an RFP, because the realization was it's not like land. We have only two tow providers on the river, and the costs can be wildly variable depending on the conditions, the size of vessel, and all of those types of issues involved. The central realization was, again, the Coast Guard already has a process in place to work with the private towers for the non-distressed tows, and that isn't all of the tows by any stretch, but it's for the situations where someone really is not, they're not floating down the river in danger of some other challenge, but they're in a situation where it's not a distress. So that can be referred to the Coast Guard, and their protocol can be used, and there's considerable discussion about how that's monitored, how the sheriff will be involved with knowing what's going on, and good checks and balances on that process. So I think it was a good process to develop that, and those tows are being referred there rather than having to develop a whole new system that's being managed by another agency. Looking at some of the future considerations, strength of the process, certainly I think we all had a feeling that we had accomplished an awful lot, but also felt like there was this big mountain in front of us of much more that could be done. But much has been accomplished. The changes have continued since the task force concluded work. I would imagine everybody in this room can report some frustrations since then and also report some things that have changed. But it's a good step forward. Some key leadership challenges in the future. First, we do make that point again. The task force was, in effect, a virtual consolidated river response agency, and we emphasize the value of that. That overarching view of tell us everything that's going on in the river and let's look at a best way to coordinate those resources is something that you won't find housed within the agencies on a consistent basis, because that isn't their purpose. And so having that broader view can be beneficial, and so we encourage that. And also we would be remiss if we weren't pointing out that there was an issue that that we do want to call out for both the city and the county to continue to work on, and we were hopeful that this could be resolved. It was beyond our scope, but certainly critical to resolve, is clearer, much clearer agreement on which agency has the ultimate command authority for what's called search and rescue in the ORS statutes within incorporated city service areas. Simply put, there's a disagreement between the fire and rescue services and the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office on what that scope is, who's responsible, and what the both responsibilities and liabilities involved are. And working out those issues is an important thing to get better clarification on, and that's something that would involve both legal interpretation, potentially legislative, but work that is beyond what the task force and their task would be involved in, but something that could help with improving efficiencies in the future as well. That is a brief summary, and there's an end slide to go with it. So I turn this back over to Jane.
Okay. Are there any questions at this point? We have some speakers.
Jane, I have a couple. Couple of questions, too.
You want to go first?
No, go ahead.
So on the radio and dispatch issue that we saw a slide on, we had a work session last week on PSSRP, and we learned the city does not currently have interoperability.
Public Safety Revitalization Project.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Does not have interoperability with the Oregon State Police in regards to a common radio frequency to help in coordinating a response. So I want to just follow up on what you said, sir, in your presentation. Will the results of this task force ensure that responders have the capabilities and will, in fact, use a common radio channel on a marine incident?
I think I would put it this way. First, I can't speak to the state police because that wasn't one of the, with all the partners, that wasn't one that was on this this process. But it is designed to absolutely ensure just what you said, that the that all responders can be on the same channel and respond on that. And I'm not going to promise you it will always happen perfectly, but when the protocols are followed, yes, BOAC is in charge of defining what channel people are on and making sure that they're all on that channel and all communicating. So that is specifically what it was designed to do.
And a second question also follows up on something you said about for this to work, there has to be leadership commitment at the county and the city going forward. Now, we know that wonderful task force reports like this sometimes get filed somewhere and collect moss. And we want this to be not only a living document, but we want it to be implemented and move forward. So what advice do you have to us as a deliberative leadership body to ensure that we move forward to implement this and to build on it rather than to revert to some of the business as usual?
Well, I might refer this to Jane and others to respond as well, but I would certainly say that a core piece of advice is to take that monthly report and have yourself or someone in your office looking at it and asking the question, does this tell us what we need? Does it tell us the information and what decisions are being made on the basis of it, just as an exercise in doing that? And we have had considerable discussions during the task force about which is there a either city or county agency that can be looking at that overall view and deciding who's going to be taking charge of that. And I would say if there was one thing, I would say, and I don't know whether it's a city or county agency, but someone who is taking that overall view is looking at that report and asking those interagency questions. Because again, in defense of all of these responders, the on-river work is a very small part of what they do. And so stepping back and saying, how do we coordinate all of this is not a natural thing for them. And we don't have a specific recommendation with somebody stepping forward and saying, we'll do it out of our office. But finding, making sure that level of review is there would be appropriate.
I agree. I also think that, to build on what you're saying, that having elected leadership interested and encouraging, for instance, you lead the Fire Bureau, encouraging and asking about participation in this and how it's going and what the impacts are being. And I also think that we have, even though this is a very small amount of their work, the overlapping benefits by building those networks of communication and building those relationships, I think, is beneficial beyond just what goes on the river. So, and I do want to, we do have more people to speak to you, so if you have,
I just have one more question, Jay,
sure,
for you.
Okay.
On the search and rescue issue that was identified, where there's a disagreement.
Right.
And I'm interested in this in my capacity, obviously, as the fire commissioner. Is this a disagreement that is resolved at a leadership level? Is there underlying legal issues that have to be resolved, or is it both?
It's in my opinion, it's both. If we decide we need to really resolve it to a point of no more question, it would involve legal and probably legislative clarification and work. We decided to work at going a route where where a working relationship and a working interpretation, where a decision on the details would not stop the collaborative work. And so that can go on, but if we want to get it absolutely clear, it will probably be legal and very likely be legislative.
And that would be at Salem?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next speakers.
I have a couple questions.
I want to add something too.
Yes, please.
There are a couple of things I think that are going to be necessary in order to kind of ensure the survival of this river and productivity of this river safety panel. And we've existed for the last 6 months or so on the goodwill of the sheriff's office in terms of producing this analytic information. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to do that for a time, but if this panel's to go on, there needs to be a permanent home for that responsibility, and I'm not sure where that is. The second thing is that, you know, this is a group of, at all levels, this really is a group of volunteers. I mean, nobody's going to be forced to come to these things and utilize the opportunity that's there. I think we're probably going to need some kind of a record keeper or a note keeper or somebody that can actually put together and continue to provide some consistent record keeping for us. So beyond those things, I think my
question kind of relates to that. It on the aggregation of data, the enhanced reporting system, it relies primarily on BOAC information, right?
Yes.
Dispatch. Is the Coast Guard part of the BOAC dispatch system? Or Coast Guard?
No. Well, they do. Go ahead, John.
Does BOAC have information on Coast Guard dispatches?
It has some, but I think the answer to your question is a little bit different. The core of the report was built out of getting better information out of BOAC, which was the larger challenge. But the report is designed to also indicate, you'll find in the report, information from the Coast Guard, because the report combines information from the Coast Guard, also information from Clark County as well, and CRESA in their response system. So it's not just BOAC information. It is a recognition that, no, we need this broader information. There is also variety of Marine Board related work the Sheriff's Office does that isn't consistently part of the BOAC dispatch system. But the core, as far as how to aggregate, was we got to figure out this monster, how to get information out of BOAC that it wasn't designed to bring it out.
And so for the time being, the Sheriff's Office is going to collect data from Coast Guard, BOAC, and
has been. And those the participants agreed to provide the data to BOAC.
So in John's report, where he talks about the need to, or his slides to continue this, the safety panel is intended to continue this. The Sheriff's Office is going to continue to collect the data and report it. That is the sort of interim step to make connection between some dots, what Brad talked about in terms of finding some resources potentially from users of the waterway to help continue this work is what some of the discussion has been, but nothing resolved.
Right. My second question related to, I guess, the recommendation not to have a river net. Or one or two. I have no idea what's involved in setting up a net dollar-wise, but it intuitively sounds like a good idea. If there's something on the river, shouldn't there be a river net that everybody, especially in the situation where you have so many potential responders, is plugged into?
John, I'll let you take it. But yes, intuitively, you're right, and that we started to work along that path, and then we bumped into the where intuition meets reality.
And I could actually, I'm very conscious of all the experts behind me who can give you far more detail than I can. But in short, you have issues like if it's a law enforcement only issue, so the sheriff is being called out, they've got land-based resources, they're coordinating with maybe the Portland Police Bureau and other officers on land, and having them go over to a river net means that other resources aren't listening on that net. But the idea that the river, it sounded intuitively like a good idea at first, but the idea that the river is this world all by itself is inaccurate. And you have a lot of things that are transitioning from land onto river and changing their characteristics. And if once it goes onto the river, if it started out as a law enforcement issue and maybe there could be some officer safety
and
issues.
I guess that's what my point is. At some point, if an issue migrates to something that is clearly, you know, let's say a major event, and it's on the river,
and if it does that,
to have people be told to go to the river net.
And that's what, but what BOAC essentially does is rather than saying we have one river net channel, what BOAC would do, if it starts out law enforcement, they're going to tell people to go to this Multnomah County Sheriff's Office channel. If it starts out as a combined event, they're going to essentially create a river net for that. They're going to create one of the ops channels, typically, and everyone goes to that channel, and everybody knows that they should be on it. If it starts out as primarily emergency, so BOAC manages it, and they're in charge of saying everybody get on this. But the realization was if we just say one size fits all, anything on the river is just everybody's on the net, and then everyone's on land wondering how do I talk to these folks. There's more detail in the report on that, and I think some of the experts here can give you. They're probably rolling their eyes at this point and saying.
The part of the challenge was that has been improved upon is that BOAC and the partnering agencies did not have agreement on what John just described.
Yeah.
Or wasn't clear to all the partners that BOAC would create, would pick the channel, depending on the nature of the incident, where it was at, and could change the channel, the virtual incident-based river net. So now those protocols have been improved. No one's saying they're perfect, but they're much improved.
In a sense, if I may, this is simply, it is the same problem on land when you have the moment, you know, there's something where fire and police are being called out that immediately at BOAC and most 911 centers is turned into two separate incidents with two separate dispatchers and people who sort of need to talk over the carol to each other at 911 and some of that. And you have some of that miscommunication that starts immediately at that point. And then you're looking at how do you coordinate people getting on the same channel. The issue is that on land, there's still, and I'm sure many people in this room can describe a number of conflicting points when you had a large response and didn't have that work effectively. The whole ICS system is designed to address that. But the issue is on the water, we've got to go to ICS much more formally, much earlier, and use it effectively in a way that all of the NIMS protocols really are sort of emphasizing. We really have to use this much less informally and much more formally on the water because of the conditions there. So it's really saying, let's use this system that's been designed in a sense, and I will happily want to make room for people behind me to correct that when they
speak. Thank you.
So I thank you both, and I would like to ask Frank Bocard and Neil Hickman to come up. Neil is the analyst from over at Multnomah County who has helped put the report together. He is here to answer questions if you have, and Frank is another citizen volunteer on the team and has been working a great deal on the reporting system piece.
Good afternoon. My name is Frank Bocard, and as a private citizen representative on the River Safety Committee, I can say that I was truly impressed with the dedication and expertise exhibited by the representatives of the respective agencies that were involved. While discussions and resolutions were sometimes difficult, I believe the passion for service that each person brought to the table served in the best interests of our citizens. My specific task on the committee evolved to the development of a central report that could become a tool to measure the number, locations, and nature of the events that occur throughout the year in the Columbia, Willamette, and Sandy Rivers. This report would include all responders to specific events as well as the resolutions, and after a few false starts of attempting to determine the best place to receive the data from, John Campbell and the committee came up with BOAC. I realize I'm being a little redundant here, but I already wrote this down, so... after more false starts, we finally found in the sheriff's office several individuals that could help us get the report off the ground. Courtney Kripe, Steve Wright, and most recently, Wendy Lynn Kelly and Neil Hickman have been instrumental in putting the report together, and perhaps most important, continuing to collect data and publish the report over the last 7 months. The potential value in the report is great. It can be the one source of information that the government officials, agencies, and citizens can see what has happened on our rivers and what has been done about it over a month, a year, or multiple year comparison. This can be an invaluable tool in reviewing the changing nature of the events that occur in the river, how and where our resources are being spent, and the net result from those expenditures. However, the report we have now represents the potential, not the end in itself. To truly become a valuable tool, I believe that it needs three things. Number one, and this has already been discussed as well, a home. Whether it's an ongoing river safety committee, city hall, the county, the sheriff's office, it will require a dedicated home where it is reviewed on a regular basis, with the results being discussed and challenged, and incremental improvements made to the report and to the procedures utilized by the different agencies to provide data to the report. It needs an owner. The report needs an advocate to ensure that it is produced in a timely, accurate manner and delivered to the respective parties and is willing to defend it. And it needs a dedication to accuracy. If the information provided to the report by specific agencies is not accurate, the report will have no credibility and will not be a useful tool in evaluating river safety and agency responses. I believe this committee is important to the safety of the citizens who come in contact with our rivers by providing a forum for open discussion between the agencies. And I believe this report, with the dedication of the respective agencies, can become the basis for those discussions. Thank you.
And Neil is here to answer questions. You didn't...
I don't have anything prepared to say, but I'm here for questions if you have them.
Okay. And the next folks I would like to call up, please, are Commander Russ Proctor from the U.S. Coast Guard and Mitch Klein, also from the U.S. Coast Guard.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Jane, I want to begin by thanking you for scheduling us after all of those informative presentations. I want to begin by saying that I don't have a prepared statement, so if you'll indulge me, I'd like to offer a personal perspective. For the past 20 years of my Coast Guard career, I've had the good fortune and opportunity to work in several metropolitan port areas around the country, the Mid-Atlantic region, down on the Texas Gulf Coast, up in the Northern Great Lakes, and finally, after many years of pleading to come out to the Pacific Northwest, I finally have the good honor and privilege of coming to Portland. Throughout my career, never have I experienced the good fortune and close cooperation of the many participating agencies that we have on the Public River Safety Task Force that we have here. This has truly been both inspirational and very encouraging to see that we not only had a close community-based collaborative spirit of all of the dozen or so agencies that have a boat in the water, but this leadership initiative and the commitment that all of the task force participants put forward to producing this very comprehensive and very workable report is a shining example of that continued spirit of community-based interagency cooperation with the end goal in mind of providing better service to the public that we serve in a and to in a more efficient manner. We have a in many places, I think that we are envied for the quote problem that we often encounter, and that is the when a distress signal goes out for a boater or a mariner, the many agencies that have concurrent jurisdiction rapidly descend on scene to render assistance, and through this effort, in part, we have been able to come up with protocols that make better resource dispatch decisions as we are all, each agency is challenged continually by the limited resources and the priority demands that that we place on those resources. So I applaud the tremendous work that these task force members have contributed to this, to producing this report. As has already been mentioned several times today, I would like to also underscore the importance of this continued effort. That this is a partnership initiative that that the Coast Guard will certainly remain most committed to. And that we would certainly encourage the continued participation. I had the privilege of, on occasion, briefly visiting the team members as they were collaborating on the many issues that they needed to reach this endpoint. And I was extremely impressed with the professionalism and the perspectives that everyone brought to the table to resolve the many the issues that they needed to.
Very much.
Thank you.
And Mitch Klein, also from the U.S. Coast Guard.
I didn't prepare anything either, but I was a member of the team and was very happy to be involved and look forward to continued involvement with the whatever the new iteration of the River Safety Task Force is. One of the benefits that the Coast Guard received was installation of a CAD monitor in our command center down at Swan Island, and so we have instantaneous access to the information that BOIC is getting for any marine incident, and that's been tremendously valued to us in making our launch or not launch decisions. So that's been a real help to us and has actually decreased our caseload, our responses, and I think in a much more measured and appropriate way. And that's really all I have to say.
Thank you very much. And next I would like to invite Sheriff Skipper and Captain Reiser up from the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office.
Welcome back, Sheriff Skipper.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Sheriff Skipper on his second tour of duty.
Yes.
Thank you. Monty?
Okay, thank you, Sheriff. Good afternoon. I'm Captain Monty Reiser, previous manager of the Sheriff's River Patrol Unit. Thank you for the opportunity to share some of the successes of the River Public Safety Coordination Task Force. I consider this project to be a tremendous success, not only due to what we have accomplished in the tasks established by our charter resolution, but also for laying the groundwork for future improvements to our public safety operations on our waterways. Multnomah County waterways are comprised of about 100 river miles and a dozen or so lakes. These locations are natural treasures that have shaped our landscape for many years and are rich with wildlife and history, which provides recreation and a source of commerce and income for our communities. Our role is to not only provide safe waterways for users, but also to manage a responsible and efficient system of collaboration involving many agencies. And we're dedicated to that. This task force was able to meet the Charter's objectives, and I'm truly excited about setting into motion future steps to reach our vision of having a public safety waterway system that exceeds the expectation of residents and visitors to Multnomah County and the City of Portland, while meeting the legal responsibilities the Sheriff's Office has with the State of Oregon and with the standards established by the Oregon State Marine Board and Oregon State Sheriff's Association in regards to search and rescue. We look forward to participating in the ongoing River Public Safety Group as it continues to work on significant issues and projects while striving to reach our potential. I'd like to thank all participating agencies with a special thanks to the citizens that participated, Marilyn Roach, Frank Picard, Jim Butler, and a sincere thank you to Mr. Brad Houghton, who I've grown to respect as someone who cares very much about improving public safety and preserving the quality of our rivers. Thanks also to Jane, who was able to be a very important part of this project, and her strong work ethic and insights and friendship to the group made the project very, very rewarding. The Sheriff's Office would like to thank Mayor-elect Adams for co-sponsoring this effort. Thank you.
Thank you, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you. And from the Portland Fire and Rescue, Chief John Clum and Fire Marshal John Knorr.
Good afternoon, John Clum. Anyways, I'd like to express my thanks to the task force partner agencies for taking the collaborative approach to address some of these common issues that we have to increase our improve our efficiencies as far as service delivery on our common waterways. I think through their cooperative approach, we've already taken the initial steps to ensure some key interoperability measures that we can all work jointly together to continue to provide excellent services to the citizens of Portland. I do want to thank especially Chief Knorr for his involvement in keeping the rest of his command staff apprised of what the progress that the committee has made, and also thank the support from Commissioner Adams' office, former Commissioner Sten's office, and now Commissioner Fish's office for the support that we needed to do to make this a successful endeavor. But I would like to just end with a comment, and that is that this is only the first positive steps that we've taken as far as working to build that more interoperability collaborative relationship, and I'd hope that this report is used as a foundation to go to the next steps necessary to improve service delivery in the future.
John Knorr, Fire Marshal, Portland Fire and Rescue. I had a brief prepared statement, but many people have already said the statements that I was about to say, so I'm going to just briefly acknowledge all the participants, or many of the participants that aren't here today: Vancouver Fire Department, Clark County Sheriff's Office, Port of Portland Fire Department. This task force, while it's focused today on Portland Fire and Rescue and Multnomah County Sheriff, involved anybody who touches the waterways of Oregon, of Multnomah County and Clark County across the way. So we've had a lot of people. I especially want to thank John Campbell from Campbell DeLong Resources, who really kept us focused and moving in the right direction when many times things got bogged down. And I think as a facilitator, you did an excellent job in that respect. The four tasks that the task force was designated to accomplish have been accomplished, but as Chief Clum and others have said, it's really just the beginning. This has opened the door for us to say, we have issues to address. Let's keep it moving forward. Let's keep our responders safe. Let's keep our citizens safe and provide a good service to the public. I also want to thank Jane for also sticking by us and keeping us together when things occasionally drifted apart.
Like you had a choice, right?
Okay. And I appreciate that. Well, yep. If there are any other members or their agency leads who wanted to speak, you're certainly invited. I think I checked with all of them. My closing remark is just that I have invited all of the members to, we're going to set up an event where my husband is an archaeologist who has studied the river use through a long depth of time and has some interesting perspective on how the river was used before the white settlers arrived. And so we intend to have a slideshow, PowerPoint, whatever we call it at this point in time, and beverages, and I would certainly hope that you will join us for that. So should be informative and fun.
When is that?
We don't know yet, so I'll let you know. Yeah, I knew you'd
be there. I'll be there.
I knew you'd be there. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane. So nobody further wishes to testify? Okay. Then Carla, could you please call the roll?
Adams?
Well, the task force has completed the initial work that was given to them. And I look forward to, in my new role, ensuring, though, that the work of the group may be reconstituted in a slightly different way. We will come together and talk about that. Moves from this phase to the next phase. I think the data, the way the data is being collected and the protocols that are in place are a significant step forward. And I want to thank each and every one of you for your contributions to that. I pursued this based on a May 12, 2006 screaming front page story in the Portland Tribune that was headlined, "Lines are drawn, comma, in the water, and 100 miles of river, it's unclear where agency boundaries lie." And it included, not that the press is always right, mind you, but this is what the public was told in this story, among other things, quote, "jeopardized..." The confusion about rules and jurisdictions and protocols, quote, "jeopardized homicide investigation, unplanned expenses and already slashed budget, civil lawsuits. These are all possibilities when things get mishandled or confused." Quote, "Who responds first and what action they take can have a deep consequence. Each agency is on the same type of radio system, but not the same frequency. So there is little coordinating of efforts until multiple agencies have already responded." And it goes on and on and on. So thank you for taking up this task. We have more work to do. There are many people, in addition to Jane and John and the former sheriff, to thank. And Jane gave me a list of about 40 people. So just settle in. Well, it's going to take an hour for me to read this. Sheriff Giusto and Sheriff Bob Skipper, Mayor Potter, Chair Lynn, and Chair Wheeler. We've been at this so long. The chair's changed. The sheriff's changed. Brad Houghton, of course, thank you very much. I mentioned John Campbell, Frank Picard, Mitch Klein, Bill Reidenblum, Monty Reiser, John Knorr, Jim Klum, and everyone at the Fiscal and Research Analysis Units of the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, Steve Wright, Courtney Kripe, Neil Hickman, and Wendy Lynn Kelly. You don't often get thanked because you're the number crunchers, but it's that information analyzed and categorized in a way that, you know, we can help allocate resources and figure out protocols that really has served as the basis for a lot of these reforms. So thank you all very much. Aye.
Fish.
Well, Jane, it seems to be your day, so let me add my voice of congratulations for all of your good work. It's actually nice to be on your team.
Don't want it any other way.
Believe me. Both sides of that. To our citizen members, thanks for putting all the time into this. You know, citizens are what really drive a lot of our best process, and we know how much time and energy put into it. We deeply appreciate it. And to Chief Klum and to Chief Knorr, my partners in crime, I just want to say I'm proud of you, and I look forward to working with Portland Fire and Rescue to move our piece of this forward. To Mr. Campbell, as you probably already know, you actually have the most honored name in Portland Fire and Rescue history. We have the Campbell Memorial is our dedicated site honoring fallen firefighters, and we have a Campbell water boat, which is our most historic vessel. And in 2011, we'll be celebrating the centennial of the Campbell Memorial and the 10th anniversary of 9/11. So we hope that you're around to join us for that. And also, just a comment to my friends in the Coast Guard on Swan Island. I actually spend more time on Swan Island than I'd like to publicly admit, because my stepbrother lives on the Global Sentinel. And so thanks for all your good work, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank the River Public Safety Coordination team, Jane Ames, for her capable leadership, and all the members who participated. I think the goal here is to increase the safety of our